previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
Guys, I got a real good feeling about this one. A real good feeling.
So I made this unplanned cameo on this podcast. I was wearing a cowboy hat and sunglasses, which is weird because I stole them off this hobo.
I mean, if we tag them in the tweet, then they're sure to watch. At least a publicist will.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
I'm Eric Sandin.
And together, we'll mingle with Christians.
That's true.
And anyone else, really. We don't have any requirements or restrictions. Yeah.
That wasn't an exclusive thing that you just said there.
Yeah. Generally not together, though, because we're a little far away. So individually, we'll generally.
I guess if you're looking at the world as just like a whole, then yes, together we're mingling with Christians.
Right. Yes, but, together, all of us.
In a more localized sense, not so much.
Maybe we should explain why we're talking about this.
Well, so normally we would spend some minutes bullshitting about fuck all until we get around to talking about the movie, but we're going to start right now, I guess.
Friends.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Don't care. Here we go. So what we do on this show is we pick movies and try to see how long we can pay attention to those movies with no distractions present. Often the movies we pick are terrible. We pick terrible movies on purpose. And it's just a test of our endurance and our ability to pay full, undivided attention to something that clearly does not necessarily warrant it. And then we write down how long we lasted. And at that point, we can either just stop watching the movie or we can continue with as many distractions present as we like. And so this week, we have Eric Sandin's pick, Christian Mingle, the movie. And apparently a test pattern for Ayaz.
Ayaz is now a test pattern.
Well, I wanted to become more colorful, maybe more all-encompassing. So color bars, that's me.
Excellent. So first of all, Eric, we don't normally do this, but Eric, what inspired you to choose Christian Mingle the movie?
So, I mean, there was no real inspiration behind it other than the fact that Liz and I were very bored one night, and I was like, that looks horrible. I should watch that. About 4 minutes in, Liz was like, no, this looks like a PWP movie. You should save it for then. And she was right. It might have also been a little payback for Mandy Moore. That movie was horrible.
So that's Love, Wedding, Marriage, right? So love, yeah. Poor Ayaz. Love, Wedding, Marriage also was so here's the thing. I kind of had a crush on Mandy Moore, and I also kind of have a crush on the lead actress of Christian Mingle, the movie. I'm slowly killing my crushes. Not literally. Just, the crush I had on them is dissipating rapidly. So sad to say that Lacey Chabert, who is the star of Christian Mingle, the movie, the little bit of the gleam in my eye has dimmed. after seeing this film. All right, so Eric, since you started watching it first before it became an official Podcast Without Pretense film, assuming let's just give you a pass and say that first one doesn't really count because at the time you were just kind of trying to satisfy your curiosity. When you sat down to actually watch it, how far did you get?
So I made it 21 minutes 36 seconds. Yeah.
That's pretty good. What about you, Ayaz?
I'm looking for my numbers here. And the first official number where I'm officially out is 1 minute and 38 seconds, and here's why. I had my laptop open in full screen for so I could write notes, and then a text notification popped up, which isn't supposed to happen in full screen. But if you don't count that, it was 20 minutes and 17 seconds.
Somewhere around the same time.
For me, it was 17 minutes even. Like 17 minutes, 0 seconds, which amused me. The reason that I stopped it, I could have kept going, but I stopped it because I was getting the overwhelming desire to take notes, and I was going to use my computer to do it. So I was like, well, I'll stop now because I need to at least write down my thoughts of the stuff I've already seen before I start documenting what happens from this point forward. And I've got about 6 pages of notes. So,
I will also say I have like way more notes than I generally have. Like just a ton of notes.
I have average sized notes. And by the way, I just double checked something in my notes. I knew that 20-minute number was weird because 20 minutes when I get my second text, so I should be out again. But the actual time where I give up and just say like I just want to order food because it just made me hungry was about 49 minutes in.
Oh wow!
So
I'm impressed.
Hunger is an odd reaction to this movie.
Well, they were trying to eat sushi and that made me hungry. But anyway, I think that Jonathan should do his 6-page opus
and
be prepared for lots of interruption by the both of us because we have plenty of our own notes. Because I don't think there's a need for us to do all of our notes.
Well, first of all, we need to point out at the very beginning that this movie has some of the traditional crutches that films have in order to let the audience know what they should be thinking and feeling. And the big example of that is the voiceover narration. Do either of you have a note on the opening narration? Because I wish I had written that down at this point, but because I went back to write about it after I got 17 minutes in, but I didn't go back to watch it again.
I do have mine.
Go ahead.
She found him with a capital H. So Lacey Chabert will be dating God. Terrific. This could be good. And that's pretty much it.
Got it.
The only note I have on the opening narration was she's now decided she has to do something different to find a guy. She's decided to do something different, totally different. She works at an ad agency run by a guy who thinks he's a captain. That is my note on the opening narration.
So here's my I will launch into this and you guys stop me whenever you need to. So here are my pre-stoppage notes, and it's just a tiny number for these. Lacey Chabert plays a single lady named Gwyneth who is tired of being single. She wants to meet a decent guy. The movie opens with her on a date with a dude who keeps looking at a blonde chick at the bar rather than listening to Gwyneth say anything. He leaves her to say howdy to the blonde, which, first digression, I don't know. I think Lacey Chabert is an absolutely stunningly gorgeous woman. And it's hard for me to believe that any person would be like who's obviously obsessed with looks, as this guy is, would, instead of looking at gorgeous Lacey Chabert sitting right across from him, glancing at the lady at the bar across the way. That immediately this movie lost all credibility with me. In other words,
they had to establish what kind of guy she's attracting. And the guy's also saying something about the smooth guy, the loser guy, says, "I love stinky cheese, but it clogs the pipes." This is what he's talking to Lacey about, which,
to
even
be fair,
I know
though,
is a bad line.
Spoiler alert, the man that Lacey Chabert's character Gwyneth ends up with is equally dumb, just in a different way. But we'll get to him.
Yeah.
So Gwyneth complains to her friends about her situation, and then ultimately decides to try the Christian Mingle website after seeing an ad on television a couple of times. So they establish this early in the film where she's got the TV on in the background. It's late night television. She sees infomercials. Like, everything that's on late night television ends up pertaining directly to her life. She sees late night television infomercials for a product that she ultimately is going to have to try and endorse.
To be fair, she's probably watching Lifetime. Although the product she's endorsing wouldn't be on Lifetime, so
but also
confusing what station she's watching.
Before we move on, I have here, Gwyneth goes home after talking to her friends. What a loser! She's eating a cookie while on her computer. That's worse than writing notes while watching a movie.
Okay. Well, she decides to use the Christian Mingle website after the second time that she sees an ad for it. And the first time, she clearly thinks it's like sappy and weird and kind of
which
just
is like,
for losers.
Which is like a year later, right? Because she sees the first commercial about Christian Mingle. And there's like people, and it's like Christmas, and they're having a Christmas together, and they met on Christian Mingle. And then we fast forward a year, and she sees another one.
Like, we don't fast forward a year. No, we get to New Year's. Yeah. New Year's is after Christmas.
Right.
The year did change. You're totally right. There was a year. There was a year change, but not a whole year change.
Yeah, it was essentially a week. Like,
the voiceover didn't clear that up for me because it was like now. Oh, maybe she just meant now it's a new year.
Now we do eventually go a year after this initial night.
Right.
That's at the end. So, all right. Gwyneth works in an advertising firm in which needle-nose Ned Ryerson, bing, is the boss and wears a captain's hat all the time. And that's normal in this world. Gwyneth arranges to meet with a nice guy at a coffee shop. Nice guy is super nice and earnest. And Gwyneth decides to double down on the God thing, claiming she goes to church regularly and saying a prayer before they have coffee to earnest guy's amusement. She even crosses herself. Christian dude says she has spunk.
Wait, you skipped a whole bunch of stuff here.
You did skip a lot. I got stuff here.
Eric, take it away. Before we get to the spunk again.
Let's see. They need to market this hair product for some famous dude. Hair product makes you grow hair. I forget who the famous guy was for that.
Donnie DeBona. He's played by...
I've got information on that.
Okay, we'll get there.
I have a simple note. Hold the fuck on. That was definitely Chrome, and now she's using Safari. I call bullshit. come on. Who switches browsers like that?
she's now researching Christianity. Why would you go from Chrome to Safari?
Right. There's no reason for this. You skip the part where she actually researches Christianity and buys Christianity for Dummies.
Yeah.
And then I assume she's on a date with one of these Christian guys. Yeah.
What about you, Ayaz? Did you have any other notes you wanted to add?
Yeah, sure. I said, it's time to go to work. And shock and surprise, she works in advertising because every woman in every movie works either in advertising or for a magazine or something like that.
Especially if they're in New York City.
Right. Maritime advertising is a business. I'll assume it's very specialized to boats and seafaring items. She's in her office. Her last name must start with an H because there's a giant G and a giant H on her wall. Yep, her last name is Hayden. The guy from Memento, the guy who kills his diabetic wife, is in this. That'd be Ned Ryerson.
Yep. Bing!
I will spend time trying to remember the character's name. Have I told you about Stanley? Sammy? Jenkins? I can almost hear Joe Palantonio screaming at Guy Pierce. I can't remember the guy's name. Donnie DeBona, the infomercial king, is coming to maritime advertising for marketing. He's found a cure to baldness. It's Jay Peterman from Seinfeld. And then there's the research on Christianity. And then she's got her date with Paul Wood.
So
Jay Peterman from Seinfeld.
No, it's not Jay Peterman. I mean, the character is kind of. But the actor's not.
Is it the same actor who was Jay Peterman?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I'll look it up while you're going.
He looked different to me.
Who has the hair product. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it Jay Peterman? Yes. Huh. Totally.
He looked different to me, but then I'm terrible with faces. So, all right. So I get into DeBona in a second because these first notes are a little scattered because, again, it was before I had stopped and actually started taking notes while watching the movie. So here's another part that falls in there. Gwyneth then is confronted by sassy black lady coworker, but don't call her Oprah, and I wouldn't, because that seems racist to me. But that didn't stop Gwyneth. Sassy black coworker calls Gwyneth out on posing as a Christian just to find a man. Gwyneth claims she's more Christian than not, though the last time she went to church, she was actually crashing a wedding. Gwyneth says she's 50% Christian. Sassy black lady says it's an all or nothing type of thing. No shades of gray with sassy black lady. Gwyneth's ad firm has a hair growth guy named Donnie DeBona, here on out called Boner, considering signing them on. Boner challenges Gwyneth's skepticism in a way that makes me wonder how it will turn out later. Will the drug actually work? Will the message be, hey, stop questioning stuff all the time, because thinking is hard and will just make you miss out on all the good stuff, because that would be amazing. Gwyneth has a group call in which she talks to all of her friends about how great she thinks the Christian dude is, and her girlfriends all tell her it's the end of days and someone will get hurt or something.
Yep.
Seem kind of bitchy.
Her girlfriends who are kind of modeled after this Sex in the City group of friends, apparently.
Yeah.
There is one point where they have a four-way like video call or four-way split phone call montage, and my note on that is literally, do people actually do that anymore? I don't think that's a thing. My note is on the date is the moral of this movie that even if you're not Christian, you should check it out because they're cute guys.
Right. I was wondering for a while if this was going to become a hour and a half long ad for ChristianMingle.com. It kind of isn't, which leads me to ask what the fucking purpose is of this movie, but we'll get to that too.
it's hard to nail down what audience they were targeting here.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my chief. That's my chief. I'm concerned's the wrong word, but I'm confused about that as well. So here's the rest of my notes, or continuation. Gwyneth goes out on date two with Christian Dude at a sushi bar. Christian Dude clearly has never had sushi before, or sake. His family works in construction, though he does administrative work for the company. His job is sort of like Gwyneth's job at the ad firm. I notice Gwyneth doesn't pray over sushi the way she does over coffee. Christian Dude tries tuna, chews it approximately 8,000 times, and never finishes because the rapture happens and he's beamed up to heaven. The chewed tuna remains suspended in midair for about a second before plopping onto the bar. Just kidding. He finally swallows it. Gwyneth seems unimpressed with his sushi eating abilities, despite the fact he's stepping outside his comfort zone in order to please her. And I think that's an important note, is that it's clear that this guy likes her and that he's willing to try things that he's not comfortable with necessarily in order to try and get closer to her.
Yeah, we have to back up a second here, because she also recommends that he tries uni, which is sea urchin, which if you haven't had sea urchin before, it is not a good thing to recommend to anyone at the first time.
But she actually says that's advanced sushi and that he should start with something simpler.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to add to this, the sushi date. So Paul is his name. Christian Dude is known as Paul Wood. So Paul wants to try the sushi because it's the in thing. I thought it was just a thing at this point, because it's not an in thing anymore.
In thing.
It's just the in. It's what people do now. It's like,
this is supposed to. It's supposed to inform you that Paul is a simple man.
Well, yes,
and boy, he gets super simple.
And the woman he's dating does 4-way phone calls, which everyone still does. Because then it's Paul trying to eat with the chopsticks. I have this note, big and bold in all caps: "Swallow, Paul, fucking swallow." He takes forever.
And that takes you back. All right. So anyway. Gwyneth asks sassy black friend what goes on at a Bible study. Then we cut to her buying books and studying the Bible, all to get a man. She consults the web, the Bible, and a Bible for Dummies book. Gwyneth goes to Christian Dude's friend's home, so Paul's friend's home, for Bible study, and the following exchange happens. So this is one of several examples where I wrote down verbatim an exchange. So Paul says, "This is Jimmy and Jesse McKenzie, two newlyweds. They met on Mingle, turned me on to it, praise the Lord." And then the two newlyweds say, "Praise the Lord." And then he says, "And this is their beautiful home." And the two say, "Aw." Like that. Like, this is their beautiful home. Yeah. And together they just go, "Aw." I'm like,
We get a great pan around the room because there are lots of Christian posters everywhere, which is kind of amusing.
It's like Jesus took a shit all over this house. I mean, it was just...
Yeah. Well,
there was Jesus shit everywhere is what I'm saying.
Yes, I guess if Jesus pooped throw pillows and posters, which he might have, the records are sketchy at best. So maybe he did.
Look, God works in mysterious ways. At any rate, I said that this was such a dumb, hollow exchange that made me laugh, and I actually watched it a second time because I thought it was so funny.
We learned something important there. So I had a couple questions about this one. Serious question, though. What the hell does go on at a Bible study? Because I've never been to one.
Cookies and
lemonade, I guess, was my guess. What if she brought the wrong translation of the Bible? I mean, is it King James or what? Like, how does she know what Bible to bring? There's a lot of different versions in there. I guess her boyfriend might have told her. I don't know.
Because is it forgive us our trespasses or forgive us our debts? I mean, that's important.
and then finally, oh snap, asking about Kel-Kel, because we're introduced to Kel-Kel.
Yeah, I've got a note on that too.
Yeah, who he'd met at a summer camp friend. Which is just strange. Come on.
Here we go. Let me give you my little rundown of this. So here are the other people besides the McKenzies who have a lovely home. Aw. It's Tommy and Gabby are also there, and they're going to have a baby. It's in Gabby's belly.
Yep.
That's a line in the movie. And Gwyneth says, "Praise the Lord," To which Paul says, indeed. He just praised the Lord for finding ChristianMingle.com. But when she says praise the Lord for a couple expecting their first child, it's weird. What? Anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's some other woman whose name I didn't catch, but I think it's Kelly, so let's go with that. Turns out I was right. Paul says that they have camp stories, Bible camp. In response, Kelly gives the world's worst "oh, you" type of take and points at Paul.
Seriously, oh, she was horrible. You. Horrible.
Oh, yeah, no, she was the worst. I'm pretty sure Kelly is actually Satan in this movie. So 5 hours later, I skipped a paragraph. It says, Gwyneth looks around the house, which appears to have been the site of a massive dump by Jesus, as there are Christian-themed items everywhere. And so this prompts her to launch into a Bible reference. And I've paused the movie at this point, again, because I anticipate something painfully awkward is going to happen and that we're supposed to find it funny. 5 hours later, I unpause. I listen to Gwyneth start to quote a passage about infidelity. I pause again. Oof. So, this supposedly intelligent woman who works in PR lacks the social awareness to avoid quoting awkward scripture? What? I found this part truly insulting, that we're shown a woman who is, by all estimation, quite capable in her field. And yet, in this realm, somehow without even a minute amount of comprehension, says absolutely the wrong thing in every situation. As if she's incapable of comprehending what the meaning of words are.
I would assume that, like, the Bible for Dummies would have explained a lot of this, like, really simply. But,
yeah.
What so she needed was... She needed a Bible club for dummies. That was the problem.
Yeah.
She had them at the ready. She just lined up the first one that was in the chamber. It was like, that'll be fine. She didn't think it through. I'll just assume that she was freaked out by the Jesus shit, as you put it. And also Kel. Because maybe it's just like, maybe he's with Kel and they should be like not beef together or something like that. Let's assume, I'm going to assume, which is not even a great idea, that the Gwyneth character is not stupid.
Yeah, I was just about to say, either she's not stupid, she's just incredibly out of her element and therefore is making bad choices out of just being sheer nervousness. Or Christianity for Dummies was way too advanced a level for her to start at. One of the two. So I unpaused it again. Finally got through this. Bible study happens in earnest. Gwyneth is lost but is encouraged by Paul to be herself. Whoever that is, she says playfully, which becomes a theme in the movie somewhere an hour further in. Then we get a montage in which Gwyneth stares at motorcycle repairman's chest because he's wearing a cross. Paul is a simple guy that's driving me nuts. And they're talking, and then she's talking to Paul about what his mom would want her, or what he was imagining his future would be, something along those lines. And she says something, "You and Kelly would be two kids and three dogs deep by now." And he says, "The barking kind." And I wrote,
go ahead.
All right. I wrote, what the fuck does that mean?
Well, here's the thing. They're on a hot dog date. The first date was sushi, and the second date they went to a hot dog place because Paul, he's a guy of simple tastes. So they went out for this one date with hot dogs. So they're eating hot dogs, and you'll be three dogs deep or whatever, two dogs deep. The barking kind actually made sense because Paul's a dweeb, but he thinks he's kind of funny.
All right. That's fair. That's fair. I'm glad that you... this was clearly where I wasn't paying attention to the actual visuals on the screen. Because I did not pick up on that joke. But that is absolutely fair.
My note literally says hot dog date.
Nice. Yeah. I like... Hot dog date would be a great name for an album. All right. So I've got... Gwyneth talks about how she wanted to be a teacher but ended up in PR, where faking it is part of the job description. Paul reveals that all the men on his mother's side are pastors. So he comes from a line of bricklayers and air sawers. An air sawer is a preacher who saws the air with his hand while speaking the word of God. It's a Southern Baptist term. I don't expect you guys to be familiar with it. Paul's dad found driftwood one day and carved a statue of Jesus out of it and found the Spirit. Hallelujah. Gwyneth says, wait, your dad was a drifter. Your last name is Wood, and he carved a statue of Jesus out of driftwood? Sounds like she's catching him out in a story, but his reaction is, golly gosh gee whiz, I never thought of it like that. And she's charmed, yep. And nothing fucking happens.
I have... GH thinks this is bullshit, right? That's why she's calling him out in the driftwood thing. Nope, it's just neat. Totally did not get why that wasn't calling
her out. Which is a nice way of saying nothing fucking happens.
Also, Paul wanted to be a rock star.
But that's true. Yeah, I didn't write that part.
I bet he's a Christian rock singer by the end of the movie. I was wrong.
So my next thing is Paul's driftwood moment happened in a science fair, which totally makes sense. The science project was a mouse maze with one mouse being subjected to heavy metal and flashing red lights and another to classical music and a serene blue light. Paul thought that the metal mouse would run the maze faster. Paul then said he got so fixated on the cheese, the goal for the mice, that both mice were going were aiming for, but each one was taking their own path. And Paul somehow goes from the cheese to Jesus's love, and I honestly don't know how he got there.
I don't know. I missed it. And of course, like, he missed so many variables in that study. First of all, mice like folk music. So anything else, they're not going to move faster. After the story, though, there was a voice interjection from our main character that just said, the cheese, that amused the hell out of me. I burst out laughing at that one.
Is it because cheese sounds like Jesus?
Yeah. So he found out how to love God through shitty science. Jesus, great pun.
So as I understand it, apparently I was really paying attention to the movie up to 49 minutes in, where I stopped caring and ordered food. Okay. So Paul is talking about how the end goal is something that he was not thinking about. The way is something important. So the end goal is what you should be focused on, and the goal should be Jesus' love. But by the way, he does mention this line, which drives me nuts. It's not even in my notes, but I remember this. Because he says, so I won the science fair, and then I found Jesus. It's like, wait a second. How the hell did you win science fair with that stupid thing? You didn't even tell us which one worked. Like, shouldn't they have both? Like, did you have a – what was your control? Because you didn't have a control.
Hey, proved nothing. The hypothesis. It's fine. Like,
clearly, both mice found Jesus, and it was a religious school, so he won. Yeah. I cannot stress this enough. His explanation for realizing that he needed to seek out Jesus's love, it makes a huge leap. Like, there's no connective tissue between his explanation and the conclusion. And this is a problem that happens throughout the movie. This is me being serious here. I was telling someone earlier about this. So I was like, it's like if you saw a game where you are allowed to move one space at a time, and you start on space one, and then you're on space three, and no one remembers how you pass through space two. It's like space two didn't exist. In this case, space two would be the connective tissue that actually leads you to understand what Paul means when he's telling the story, and how this experiment was the thing that opened his eyes to what he needed. The movie is terrible at articulating that, and that's a problem because that's the crux of the film, is the Gwyneth's journey, the same thing. And Gwyneth's journey, spoiler alert, has the same fucking problem in that the moment when she has her realization, which is about four more pages from now of notes, there's not that connective tissue where you see the moment that really captures her. And it frustrates me because I think this movie could actually be okay if it had that. I think if it had that moment where the audience can really see the transformation, the moment of realization, it wouldn't be a great movie, but it would be a more coherent movie.
Now, Jonathan, can I give you all Kirk Cameron-like in Saving Christmas and try to make sense of everything you just said? Would you mind?
I don't mind if you try.
I mind.
Shut the fuck up, Eric. You chose the goddamn movie.
So here's how I'm thinking this movie's actually happening. One, it's written and directed by Corbin Burnson. So either you take that with a grain of salt or cheese, whatever the hell you want to take it with.
You should also mention he's the bicycle repairman as well.
Yes, with a giant cross who has the dead wife. Of course, everybody's wife is always dead if you build shit. I don't know what's wrong with that. But anyway, let's assume this is entirely in the viewpoint of the Gwyneth character. She is so wrapped up in her whole own life. She's narrating it, obviously, for us. She's like not paying attention to everything Paul is saying because some of this stuff is just idiotic. So she's just
So she's only catching every third sentence?
Yeah. So when she says, maybe when Eric picked this up, when she says cheese, like she's just skipped over like a whole bunch of shit because she's so self-involved and currently trying to figure out, what other shit do I have to say to make this guy believe me? What is this going to have to take? And what's the next step I have to do? And what are my bitchy girlfriends going to want to say to me about this? And maybe her friends really aren't that bitchy, but she acts like they are, or she thinks they are. Because later on, not to jump too far ahead, she has a fight with God. So this has to be from her viewpoint, where she's lost her fucking mind in the very beginning.
You're giving the movie way too much credit. But I got to say, I love your take on it, because we're approaching some like American Psycho shit with this approach to film interpretation. Yeah.
That's exactly what this movie is. It's the American Psycho of Christian dating sites movies.
I so wish that you were right and that it wasn't just a sloppy attempt at trying to do a romantic comedy with a Christian theme.
I tried. I tried to tie up the presents to like buildings in Jerusalem. I tried that too. Oh, that was Kirk Cameron again. Sorry, my bad.
All right. Should I jump back into it?
Yes, yeah, please do. Please.
So it's the end of date two. Goodnight kiss time. Almost doesn't happen, but then it does. Then Gwyneth attends church. We see her pick out an outfit for church, and then we see her looking around church after service, but we don't see any of the service itself. So we never get a chance to see, is Gwyneth comfortable in this environment? Is she uncomfortable? Does she understand what's happening? Does she understand the sermon? What is the sermon about? What kind of church is this? We don't get to find out any of that. We know it's a mega church. Like, that's it.
She goes, it doesn't look like a mega church, though. It actually looks like a Catholic church, because a lot of other churches use crucifixes, right? That's mainly Catholics.
No, crucifixes are everywhere. Crucifixes with Jesus on them usually are the Catholics. The question was, Well, I mean, well, the crucifix is the cross thing, but was there a Jesus on it?
Jesus. A cross is a cross.
Well, I guess you're right. I never thought of it that way, because I was thinking it was a simple crucifix.
You can find crucifixes primarily in two places: Catholic churches and up priests' butts in Rock and Roll Frankenstein.
Anyway, so it's not wrong, which makes no sense for the rest of the stuff. But they go shopping for the outfit. She goes with her friends. My note is her hip New York friends aren't into this Christian shit. And then a note on the outfit she picks out: she's seriously wearing a sack.
She does pick like the most conservative kind of bland outfit, which is part of the joke, right? That she is dressing the way she thinks that you should supposedly dress to go to church. And this other church they go to, to me, it felt like a super, super white mega church. And at that point, Gwyneth meets Paul's parents. Hoo boy. Okay. Dad is a goofball who has a fixation on steak and cake. Amen. More on that in a second.
Yep. No.
Paul's mom is played by Morgan Fairchild. Gwyneth picks up that Fairchild doesn't like her right away. Turns out steak and cake only serves two things: steak and cake. No vegetables, no bread, no grains, because those are for godless heathens.
I have a slightly long note on this, it's a sentence, but the hell is steak and cake? Is that a thing? Fucking no way. So then I looked it up. it is not a thing. But I did find a Christian podcast about this movie. So I listened to the Pop God podcast. We can get into that later. Probably not, though. Probably shouldn't.
that's when we had a war between podcasts. I am curious to hear what they thought of the movie now. At any rate,
also weren't fans, but different reasons.
Okay, that's fair. Well, yeah. I mean, I also want to be clear again. Like, I am not a religious person. I'm an atheist. I identify as an atheist. I have no problem against people who are religious. You know, whatever you believe is your business. And as long as it remains your business, not my business, I'm happy. And I think that you can make a movie with religious tones, whether they're undertones or overtones or whatever. And you can make a good one. You can make a good one, but this is not one. To be clear, my problems with this movie have nothing to do with the religious nature of it. They have to do with the sloppy nature of the movie and how it has a total lack of charm for a romantic comedy. Yep. Steak and cake. Fairchild asks Gwyneth to say grace and the goofy music starts up. So I know she's going to fuck it up. And I pause it again because I can't watch this. Unpause. Dear Lord. Thanks a bunch for new friends. Pause the movie. Unpause. The prayer was so rambly and awkward, I fast-forwarded it. I actually skipped through a fair section because the prayer goes on for a while.
So
the joke, Gwyneth, she keeps looking at the mom to see if maybe she said enough, and then she gets the feeling that she hasn't said the right thing or hasn't said enough yet, so she keeps going, and that goes on for a while. I'm sorry, Eric, you were going to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to quickly move on to did you see the part or miss the part where Paul turns out to be a really shitty dude because he's going to Mexico tomorrow?
No, I've got that. That's my next bit.
Yeah.
Can I get to that Grace stuff real fast?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I watched the entire rambly Grace scene, and Mom asks Gwyneth to say grace, but she doesn't know how. She needs to say, I'd be like, oh, how do you end it? She needs to say amen. Say amen. This is an embarrassing grace. Someone say amen. Damn it, you were supposed to say in Jesus' name, amen. Then Mom talks about the trip.
Yeah. And so afterward, Paul's mom makes Paul talk about their upcoming missionary trip to Mexico, where they will restore a church door to door. We shall restore, says Paul's dad multiple times. I'm pretty sure he's had a stroke due to all the steak. Paul's mom appears to relish that Gwyneth has just discovered the guy she likes is going to leave for Mexico for a month the following day. Then Paul's mom tries to warn Paul off of Gwyneth, which is an incredibly Christian thing to do.
Yep.
Wait, so you guys don't have a note about Paul's mother's name is Grace, and Paul was bad at, I mean, not Paul, Gwyneth was bad at saying Grace, so she's bad with Grace, and Grace the mom?
I did. Clever, Mr. Burns. I never totally registered. I never registered what the mom's name is, so I just call her Morgan Fairchild. This is one of those elements where I hate this in all religious movies that incorporate this kind of thing, where you have a holier than thou character who is both literally and figuratively holier than thou, who maintains a sense of superiority over someone else while simultaneously making that person feel badly for not being Christian enough, because it's such a patronizing fuck of a thing to do to people. It's the growing up in Southeast United States in the heart of Southern Baptist territory, I saw this kind of bullshit all the time. And maybe I wouldn't even be a hardcore atheist if I hadn't encountered it, because it turned me off so much that I was, from an early age, determined not to follow that. Maybe I'd be an atheist anyway, I don't know. But I certainly know that it turned me off of the Southern Baptist churches that were around my hometown, which were fairly typical, I would argue, especially the old school hellfire and brimstone style Southern Baptist churches. And so when I see this sort of character, particularly when they're being portrayed as not a bad person, it pisses me off.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we're in Mexico now. He calls her from Mexico and tells her to come down. We get our first shot of Mexico, I think, which my note in all caps is, dude, that's totally the fake Mexican town from Arrested Development, also Three Amigos. I'm pretty sure there is one soundstage in LA that is the Mexican town.
I've got a little bit more in between there, but yeah, I've got like Gwyneth meanwhile talks to sassy black friend before she goes down to Mexico.
She gets a name. Says,
oh right. Yeah.
No, she doesn't. She gets sassy black friend. Through
she finally gets a name. It's in this scene. Her name is Pamela. It's the first time. It's like 40 minutes into the movie, and they finally give her a name. Not Oprah. Pamela.
Yeah. Not Oprah would have been her other name that I would have chosen, but sassy mm-hmm. black friend is what I have in my notes, so that's what she stays. But it is nice, though. No, they finally bothered to name her in the movie. Gwyneth says Paul was great but goofy, and she should get a dog. Then she says, everyone just seemed so happy. That's what Gwen says about the Christians. And, well, yeah, they stopped questioning things years ago. So, obviously, they're happy. Stop thinking. That's just the Christians in this movie, mind you. Not a blanket statement. Maybe. Now we're meeting with Gwyneth and Boner. Gwyneth starts making up a PR campaign on the fly because she hasn't been doing her homework because she spent all her time doing Christian homework as opposed to her actual PR work. Her first attempt was to compare the pill to a bullet, but that doesn't go over well. So then she turns it into a PR campaign against God. You know, like, God told you could be bald, but this pill, in defiance of God, will bring hair back. Sassy black lady can't believe what she's hearing. Neither can I. Eventually, she works her way around to suggesting God made the hair pill and that will miraculously solve baldness with a little faith. Meeting's over. Gwyneth runs and hides. She gets on the phone with Paul, and he invites her down to Mexico. Then her boss comes in to yell at her, and she decides to go down there. Cue stereotypical Mexican music. And Gwyneth arrives in the little town dressed in a sundress. The community is simple and poor and speaks English primarily, but they're clearly in Mexico and they're native Mexicans, not English actors speaking.
They're not in the town from The Three Amigos or Arrested Development.
Right. It's not at all. It's clearly an authentic Mexican village.
Before we move on, by the way, before they get to Mexico, after Gwyneth finally calls him back, that's finally where I gave in. I was hungry. That's the point fair. Where I was like, screw. So the rest of my notes get so much more sketchy. So I'm looking forward to knowing what the hell happens because I'm pretty sure I was like, is my chicken here yet?
You definitely needed some sustenance to get you through the rest of this movie.
Yeah, what a pile of shit this was. Let's keep going.
The community is simple and poor, and I bet they teach Gwyneth a valuable lesson about how real humanity exists everywhere and that her big city life isn't everything. That was a bet that I shouldn't have put money on because, honestly, I don't think it really paid off. Like, that's what the movie wants you to think happens by the end of the film, but it's so sloppy that it doesn't really justify that payoff. Anyway, she sees all the Christians dressed in white t-shirts while she's dressed up in her sundress, and then random Mexican girl runs up and hugs her. Then Gwyneth struggles with the fact she packed for a vacation, not mission work, despite the fact that everyone had been talking about building a church this whole time. So once again, we find out that Gwyneth is a moron. Brief phone call with sassy black lady, who is sassy. The construction project seems to consist of looking at the church a lot, but not actually doing anything. There's a scene where all the Christians are just looking at the church. Like, and it goes on. Like, it's silent. There's no dialogue. Long.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just looking at the church, and I'm like, did you not have a plan for what you were going to do? Because you don't look like you're doing anything at all. Then we get Daddy Wood. I'm so happy I wrote that. Then we get Daddy Wood singing and playing guitar. He sings about Jesus a lot. Gwyneth is finally starting to realize that Christians do good work through fellowship and compassion, in this movie anyway. Now we get a montage of general work stuff, moving junk, painting, donkeys, the usual. Gwyneth, meanwhile, is asleep. She dumps out her suitcase to find something suitable, and her copy of Christianity for Dummies falls out. And I bet this ends up getting revealed to everyone else later. Now that bet I would be able to collect on.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Skip to Bible study, and a villager wants to know why, if God is love, he allowed their village to be hit by a hurricane years ago, and Paul's mom makes Gwyneth answer it, which is, again, a very Christian thing to do, to lay a trap for someone who doesn't speak Spanish.
Right. I have a note on that. Wait, they just expected her to speak Spanish? Like,
right. Yeah. I mean, the vindictiveness of Paul's mother in this movie is, it's not like it's overt, but it's so nasty. Anyway,
yeah.
Paul has a heart-to-heart with Gwyneth where he lays out his thoughts. He calls her out and nails down her general life and view on religion. Having a relationship with Christ through the good and bad is more important to me than anything, he says. I just wish that you hadn't lied. Maybe if you didn't, then he trails off. This infuriates me.
Yeah, so, like, I got the, you know, my note on this is the jig is fucking up. Him, you're not a believer, my note. What the hell, man? She's trying really hard because she likes you.
Yeah, all he had to do was try and eat some sushi. She's trying to adopt an entire ethos. So I actually, here's why the line about I just wish you hadn't lied fills me with
a silent rage. It gets so angry because that he froze.
Sorry, sorry. I'll try again. Right, am I back?
Yes. Yes.
Here's why it fills me with rage. So it's the least helpful thing you can say in that situation, because the fact is she did lie, right? There's no way to go back and make her not lie. It has happened. So saying, I wish you hadn't done that, is not at all helpful. All it does is heap guilt upon the person who has done something wrong. There's no way to respond to that, right? Saying like, well, I did lie, so what now? We have to figure out how do we move forward, not I wish this thing hadn't happened, because that thing did happen. So a grown-up, a fucking adult, just acknowledges that a fucking thing happened and then moves forward. But Paul's not a fucking adult. He's a fucking moron.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate that in general in life, where someone's like, man, I wish you hadn't done that. Thanks. Yeah, I wasn't feeling badly enough for my poor decision already. Now I get to dwell on the fact that you also wish I hadn't done that poor decision, but I also can't do anything about it because that happened in the past. And time travel, by the way, is fucking impossible.
So if you're listening to this and you subscribe to us on iTunes or something, make sure you leave us a 5-star review, but you write the phrase, I wish you hadn't done that.
Yeah,
be the best.
Yes. So anyway, they break up, at least for now. And she goes wandering off in Mexico by herself.
Okay, so before my note here, it's in italics. Here's hoping GH turns to a life of crime and debauchery after this. Save the movie. It doesn't happen.
No, and I was pretty sure we wouldn't find out that she had been decapitated and her head mounted on a bridge by a drug cartel, because the voiceover narration didn't mention anything about that at the beginning of the movie.
That's true. She does survive this. I was hoping she'd go through some drugs or something.
But the fact that she wanders off by herself in Mexico where she doesn't speak Spanish was like, this is insane. I mean,
we can fast forward a little bit probably.
No, I've got plenty of notes. Here we go. So
that's, I think you missed what I was implying, Jonathan. Do you have another 3 pages on the last 17 minutes of this movie?
I've got 3 more pages. Here we go.
Yep.
So I said, anyway, they break up at least for now, and she goes wandering off to Mexico by herself. Not to worry, though, she reveals that it was supposed to happen in a voiceover, and we're only a little more than halfway through the damn movie. Beth returns to work. Her boss comes in asking if she's feeling better, and that is when sassy black friend reveals that she's been covering for Gwyneth's absence by saying she caught strep throat. Which makes me think, maybe she should have told Gwyneth that first off. Like, hey, by the way, I cover for you by saying you have strep throat. So that way when someone asks you if you're feeling okay, you don't think it's weird. But she didn't do that until after they asked if she was feeling okay. So in the Christian Mingle universe, strep throat knocks you out for a couple of weeks, and it's dramatic. Because she says, why didn't you just say I had a flu? Why did you have to be so dramatic? Gwyneth throws her Bible and Christianity for Dummies in the garbage can temporarily, but it's okay. It's a clean garbage can that's clearly never been used before, so she can retrieve it safely. Gwyneth talks to her boss and says she can't work on the hair loss pill because she thinks Boner's product is fake. She walks away from it, saying she has to have an ounce of belief in a product if she's going to sell it. Gwyneth comes to the realization that she needs belief, I guess. It's really clear. In fact, there's not really any clear connection between her motivation and her development as a Christian. Gwyneth walks into a storefront church, like a strip mall. There's a church right there, which is not unusual. I see them here in Atlanta all the time. And people are dancing around and singing in a gospel method in the black church tradition. Only this is a diverse group filled with all sorts, including hopelessly white people. Gwyneth attends church events sincerely, volunteers at a homeless shelter, studies the Bible in a way that's totally natural and supported by the narrative if you're not thinking about it at all. I guess that's what the first half of the movie was about. Don't think or else it falls apart. Sassy black lady reveals she's Christian in a heart-to-heart with Gwyneth, which surprises her. Gwyneth says she wants a relationship with him, Jesus, and that she doesn't want to do this for Paul, but for herself. But if Paul's part of the deal, that's cool too. Gwyneth stalks Paul outside the megachurch. She has a good talk with him before Paul's mom and Kelly come in, and Kelly asserts dominance by pissing all over Gwyneth, metaphorically. She
the
actually
fact that
just
you keep referring to her as Kelly makes me like her character more, because in my notes she's Cal, and I just the fact that she's Cal.
Right. Well, the fact she asserts dominance by pissing all over Gwyneth metaphorically is my favorite part.
Yeah.
She actually just possessively takes Paul's hand to show that they are an item now, and Paul's mom is smug about it. Gwyneth gets more involved in various Christian activities like going to church and feeding the homeless. Paul asks to meet her, tells her one of the ladies who went down to Mexico.
My note right after that, by the way, when she takes his hand, my note immediately after that is the last 30 minutes or so of this movie are just fucking torture. Because I think this is when it became torture, like right then.
this is why it took me from this point forward. It took me 2 weeks to finish this movie. Paul tells her one of the ladies who went down to Mexico birthed herself a baby right in town square the way she wanted it. Christians are weird, man. Gwyneth comes clean and says she's happy for Paul, but also disappointed in him. She says that Kelly isn't right for him and that her church is chill and laid back. I mean, it's not steak and cake, but whatever.
Yeah.
Says that Kelly may or may not be for Paul and that he should be himself. Also, I hate to say this, but the high def isn't doing Lacey Chabert any favors in this scene, which was saying that I could see through makeup, and it was unfortunate. Paul shuts down Gwyneth while also saying she's totally on the path to G. Then he walks away. This was a pretty dumb scene.
You forgot the part that he's going to pray for her.
Yes.
Because he's offended by the things she's saying. He's going to pray for her.
I think I felt a blood vessel pop in my eye at that point in the movie. But yes, I remembered that part, but I did not write it down.
I hope he comes back to get her, and I'm pretty sure it'll be with a boombox in the rain, because it starts raining at the end of the scene. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I said, I hope he shows up with a boombox in this rain, jamming fucking Creed outside her window.
Right. I've got my next note is rainstorm outside Gwyneth's apartment where she's crying her eyes out. She lives above a clock and watch repair shop and a shoe repair shop, and yet she can't fix her life. Ironic, right? Kill me. Gwyneth is feeling sorry for herself and cries some more. She prays. Then she realizes that she has talked a lot about God, hasn't really been bringing him into her life. So then she looks around and sees lots of couples and is irritated. So she's essentially saying, really? To God a lot. But then she says she finally realizes what it means to ask Jesus into her life, to thank him for that solid he did for dying on the cross for her sins and all. And it comes in the form.
Wait, is it her whole fight with God? You don't have notes on that, particularly?
No,
where she's crying and she says, she's crying by her bed and she yells, I didn't really mean for 40 days as in the rain. You don't have a sense of humor. Then lightning happens. She says, then that was wrong of me as she leaves the window and talks outside to God, because talking to God, you can't do that in the bedroom. You had to open the window to tell him that. Then when light comes through her window, she yells, leave me alone, to God. She sees happy people together. She asks God, really? And then
I did say that.
That part you did say. Then the next note I have is Gwyneth doesn't recycle. The beast.
you don't have to recycle. Jesus saves, not recycles. So it's really more about reusing. Her realization all comes in the form from a Mexican girl with a really weird accent. It's not really a Spanish-Mexican accent, or at least it sounds off, like there's some Eastern European in there or something. But she sends a photo of the rebuilt church, and that touches Gwyneth's heart. almost literally, because she holds the picture up to her boob for a really long time. She travels back down to Mexico for Cinco de Mayo. Wait, no, it's Christmas. It's just incredibly stereotypical. And now we hear Maria, the student who wrote the letter, recite her essay in her awful accent. Then Eduardo or Jose or some other really Mexican stereotypical named kid, super sloppy in this movie, tells Gwyneth, the gringo, to run over to the church. So she does, sort of. She half runs, half shuffles, because those shoes wouldn't allow actual running. They're not practical. And then Paul shows up. Everyone is in Mexico. Merry Christmas. Paul explains that he and Kelly are Splitsville. Paul then kisses Gwyneth without checking to see that, you know, she's actually still single. The asshole. But she is, because, come on, Gwyneth is a hopeless mess. And so the two of them smooch in front of God and Jesus, or Jesus, whatever the name of the dude working on the church is. Oh, donkey show, guys, donkey show.
I totally have a note on that. We pan out. Some kid is leading around a donkey because we're in Mexico. That's
yes.
Why.
Yeah. They show the couple into the school, the kids show the couple into the school, and then the credits start. It took me 3 weeks to watch this movie all the way through. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
A scene at the beginning of the credits. Gwyneth smooches her fella after teasing him about going bald. Also, she has a pillow with a donkey on it. And she explains that you just need to bring Jesus into your heart to meet Mr. Right. Then we see a still photo of Paul proposing to Gwyneth, and then we get credits for real dough. Oh, and there's a post-credit shot of two Mexican dudes at a building looking at a television, and they wave to the camera, the end for reals.
Yeah.
Okay, I had a
note on the end of the credits, which was, yes, bloopers. Oh, wait, not bloopers, just Jesus and dating.
I had no idea that there was anything posted after the credits started, because I was like, fuck this movie. And I turned it off so fast, I did not know any of that happens. But I do want to give my notes real quick on the whole Mexican Christmas part two. Apparently, she's teaching English in Mexico. She needs to go to the church now. It's very important. Even I got that with my bad Spanish. Wait, she's teaching in Mexico, assuming she's living there too. And she's in the wrong place then. Paul is there. He plans to kill her on a crucifix. Okay, that doesn't happen. No more Kelly. Paul. Paul says, I was so wrong to let you go, Gwyneth. He kisses her. What if she has moved on? They kiss. She takes Paul to see her students.
True.
And then the rest of the stuff happens.
Yeah. He should have called first, right? I mean, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It's just the assumption that both Paul and the movie makes that Gwyneth is still single is not great.
Yeah.
And again, like when I said that there's not a strong connection between Paul's story about the mice and his discovery of his desire for Jesus's love, like there's no connective tissue there. Like I said, the same thing is true with Gwyneth and her journey, that it's clear she feels lost, but that's, there's not enough connective tissue there to make it feel like the Christianity is actually providing her the meaning that she's been seeking this whole time. It's just conveniently the answer without us having to find out how she realized that was the answer. It's like she had the question, she had the answer, but she didn't have the part where she out the answer. And without that, it doesn't feel genuine.
I maintain.
Unless you take in Ayaz's theory that
it's a brilliant
subversive movie.
Yes. Right. If you watch this movie, if you want to get any enjoyment out of it, think that Lacey's character is insane and you're not always getting the whole truth. And then you'll be like, oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense. How the hell else would you live in Mexico for about a year, teach kids English, and not know Spanish? Or at least enough that, hey, you have to come to the church right now. Because it's a really short sentence. So
that's true.
I bet Gwyneth's favorite episode of Star Trek The Next Generation is Darmok.
It's the one
where Picard and an alien are unable to communicate directly with each other until Picard realizes that the alien can only communicate through metaphor.
Yeah. One of my favorites is a lot of this could have been avoided if she just finished Christianity for Dummies, you know.
A lot of this could have been avoided.
She took the damn thing to Mexico with her. She should have done that book.
It could have been avoided if she had just joined AshleyMadison.com.
Fair enough. Yeah.
She would have been one of the only actual women on that website.
Yeah. Anyway, I think
who do you think this movie is for? Those are the notes about the movie, but seriously, who is this movie for?
Because it doesn't seem like it's that. I mean, you don't have to make a movie for dating sites, right? Because this movie is relatively recent. And nobody's going to watch this movie and be like, oh, I should find a dude on Christian Mingle because this worked out so fucking well.
Yeah, I mean, it's like okay, so it's not really an ad for ChristianMingle.com, despite the fact that it's called Christian Mingle the Movie. If it is an ad for Christian Mingle, it's not very effective. The website plays so little into the plot, other than the fact that that's how she meets the guy initially. After that moment, you never should mingle again. After that, from that point forward in the film,
it's got to be a movie for people. I mean, it's for people who already are believers who think that other people can have this, epiphany and become believers amazingly because they hear about some dude's rat and cheese or something.
I guess that's all I got.
I have the answer to this. Okay, so this movie is obviously it's for Christian Mingle, and now they don't have a standard set of advertisements. Essentially, Paul is Christian Mingle, okay, and he's so much a believer that even if he likes this woman, and he does, he likes her a lot, he refuses to bend to his heart or his emotions. He's going to stick to dogma. And at the end, he's going to reject her about 15 minutes ago in the movie, even when she's like, hey, I'm totally Christian. Cool. This guy is so unbelievably stubborn because if you go to Christian Mingle, clearly you are a believer through and through, and you will not waver at all. By the end of the movie, it takes a year after of Lacey being Gwyneth being a good Christian in Mexico. And then finally, it happens in a church, no less, where they kiss, because that's where you're supposed to do this stuff. So if anything, it's totally pro-Christian Mingle because Paul is Christian Mingle there.
I like your theory, and here's why. Because Christian Mingle works off of subscription services, right? So if you work under the assumption that that first girl that you is actually the one who's going to become a hardcore Christian a year later, that's how you sell your membership. I mean, or at least 2 years, something like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so the opening narration makes it seem like the most important element of this movie isn't that she ends up with the guy, which she does. Actually, she didn't. I think it would have been worked better for the film.
I have a note about that. This would have been better if that didn't happen.
Yeah, because in the opening narration, she says the important thing was that she formed a relationship with God.
Yeah.
That was the important part.
But three quarters of the way through the movie, I'm like, oh, wait. She believes in. That's the point of this movie. Are we wrapping up now? And no,
because she has to reconcile with the guy, and that subverts the whole message of the film in the beginning. If it hadn't happened, I think the message would have been more poignant. It might not have. It still wouldn't have been coherent in the sense that there's not enough progression there, but it at least would have been more meaningful. But she doesn't do that. Or she also ends up with the guy. So that's problematic. It confuses me because if this movie is for Christians, all the characters in this movie who are Christian are portrayed as weirdos and doofuses.
Yeah.
Paul's a doofus. Paul's dad
is kind of an asshole.
Paul's dad is ultimate dad joke dad.
Yeah.
It's just, and they go to Steak and Cake, a restaurant that only serves steak and cake. Right. I mean, literally, they bring out plates that just have 12 steaks piled on it.
That's why I looked it up, because I was like, I was sitting there watching this and I was like, I wonder if this is a thing in Atlanta. I'll ask Jonathan.
Steak and shake is a thing. Steak and cake is not a thing. We have cakes and ale here in Atlanta, but that's different. So it made me wonder who this movie was for, because all the characters who are Christian either come across as kind of conniving and mean-spirited or total doofuses. They might be sweet and earnest, but they're also dumb.
Except Pamela, I think that's her name.
The sassy black lady.
SBF.
Sassy black lady. Yeah.
She is actually like this most straight and narrow, not too judgy, not exactly beating Gwyneth over the head, but saying, listen, it was a very serious sight. If you're on this, you should really be into this, because you really shouldn't half-ass this. The people there are psychotic. So she's
she was the
good.
Voice of reason. She,
yeah,
I think her message,
and she's
I think her message is more. Right. Her message is more. The people who are on there are looking for someone who is also a true believer. And if you portray yourself as something other than that, you are ruining someone else's
you.
Dreams.
Yeah, yes, that's what I said. Exactly. So that's the one good Christian in this whole movie, and I guess Lacey when she becomes one after a year in Mexico as a donkey teacher.
So here's another problem. I can't really resolve Boner's hair growth pill thing either, other than the fact that Lacey just decides that she won't work on it anymore. Like, we never find out anything more about that. Like, that was a completely unnecessary plot in this movie. It did not need to be there. It was
there was one
weird.
I mean, the reason that I had a note on that, which was the reason it was there, was she couldn't do it because she didn't believe in it. And my note on that was, does she not believe in the hair product or in Jesus? Because I think what they were like trying to go for there, was that, faith has to be, or else you can't do it.
They did a really shitty job, though.
Shitty,
because...
Yeah, it was shitty, though. Yeah,
yeah. And on top of that, if it's a hair pill, you do scientific trials and you see if it works. And then you don't have to believe shit, okay? Like, I can't believe some stuff works in real life. I can't believe my light bulbs are smart. But it's fucking happening, right? So
your light bulbs are smart?
Well, yeah, they have Wi-Fi. And I can control them.
Okay,
all right. Smart bulbs. So my thought was that they were setting up the Boner hair pill to foreshadow Gwyneth's emerging faith, and that she was going to suddenly be convinced of the actual efficacy of the hair pill, and that in turn was going to lead her to the realization that perhaps she has not put her faith in Christianity the way she should have. But that doesn't happen. Instead, she rejects the pill, which makes sense. You wouldn't expect the hair pill to actually work, but I thought in the movie, maybe it does work. And that's where she's like, maybe I need to learn a lesson. Maybe the lesson here is put your faith in something. And when you put your faith in something, things, miracles can happen. But that doesn't happen. It's just distracting. It makes no sense. There's no purpose for Boner to be in the movie.
Yeah.
Boner hair pills shouldn't be in the movie.
Yeah.
Can we put this movie to bed? Or we have to keep doing this.
I'm
all right.
I think Ayaz is up for, and I know he's excited.
Yeah, because we know what he's picking.
Next week, we're going to watch, or we will watch or talk about, I don't know when we're actually watching this, Kindergarten Cop 2, a movie made recently by the brilliant, I lost his name, Dolph Lundgren. Dolph Lundgren is the star.
He really is brilliant, though.
Yeah, the guy is, but he picked the movie, so maybe he needed a boat or something. I don't know why he's in the movie.
Doesn't he have like a degree in chemistry? Is that it? I know he's got a scientific degree.
And he's also like a drummer or something. So like, but anyway, Lundgren is the star of this movie. It's top two. It's on Netflix right now. So we're going to watch it, unless it went offline and I missed it. No, it just came on like 2 months ago. So it's got to be there. Kindergarten Cop 2. I have no idea if it'll be as infuriating as Christian Mingle. Because the trailer just made look like
I doubt it.
Trailer made look like a derivative of shit, which is fine. But let's see how that goes. I'm hoping that Dolph added some funny to this. Because he was He-Man, and he was Drago. So he's got to be good, right?
He was also in one of the, at least one of the Expendables. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been in a ton of stuff. Right. I'm just going to make a pledge right here and now that when it comes back around to me, I am not picking a family movie nor am I picking a goddamn Christian movie. Because fuck both of you. Fuck both of you.
Hey, I didn't pick Kindergarten Cop 2 because it's a family movie. I picked Kindergarten Cop 2 because I liked Kindergarten Cop 1. And I wanted to see what the hell was happening with this, because you can't tell that story twice. Okay? Like, I hope this is like Teen Wolf 2 level bad. It should be that bad. But if it's not, I would be disappointed. Like, I'm hoping for this to be like a fun bad. Like, there's no way Christian Mingle would have been that.
I do hope that at one point in Kindergarten Cop 2, there's a werewolf who's enrolled in a high school wrestling team.
You just go by. There he is.
So that is Teen Wolf 2, right?
That's was wrestling.
Because Teen Wolf was basketball.
It was boxing.
Too. It wasn't wrestling. Mm-hmm. It was boxing. Okay.
Yeah, because he wears
I knew it was some form of combat sport. Well, you wear the head thing in wrestling,
no,
too.
No, but it was Puffy.
Steiner Brothers? Come on.
It was Puffy. It wasn't just ear guards? Come on. I know my Teen Wolf too, man. I know right, it. It's also, you don't wear gloves in boxing. You don't wear them in wrestling. Also, you're not usually standing up in wrestling. Usually,
Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Anyway. You wear the gloves. I mean, it's...
Fine. It's Teen Wolf 2... I'll make that the next movie, like 3 weeks from now. I want to make sure Netflix carries it.
I'm sorry, I take it all back.
I will put it online. I have the DVD, man. I will. Don't do this to me. Jason Bateman at his worst. And you're like, this guy's never going to recover. Yeah, Jason Bateman's a star. And you're like, there's no way he's going to ever be anything after this. He's hit rock bottom. Good on that guy for surviving that piece of shit. Anyway.
You have to watch the best of the worst episode of Red Letter Media where they look at how can I tell if I'm really in love, which was a VHS tape that came out like in the early 90s. And it has both him and Justine Bateman in it. And it's insane. You've got to watch that episode, Ayaz. I think you'd love it. Oh, your audio's out, though.
Yeah. Maybe you should pick that for your next thing. We don't always have to do movies.
Okay.
Anyway. I think we should look into the future, because this is like the longest episode we've done in like a month or 3 months. You guys ready?
Sure.
Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
The only reason that last episode was so long was because your video gave a shit in the middle of it.
You know, what's weird is I thought Teen Wolf 2 wasn't exactly like Gladiator, but it kind of was the same movie.
Kindergartners are really Christian. I just realized that.